quality monitoring and evaluation. Three of the committee's terms of reference relate to quality monitoring and evaluation. Terms of reference 1, D, E, and F. This chapter examines issues regarding compliance with the New South Wales Disability Service Standards, New South Wales DSS, for services provided and funded by Ageing, Disability and Home Care, ADHC, including mechanisms to monitor and act upon non-compliance. Compliance with the Disability Services ACT 1993, New South Wales, is also examined in this chapter, with regard to the provision of the quality of services provided to people with disability. The quality of services provided in licensed boarding houses is also examined. The handling of complaints and grievances regarding the provision of disability services is examined in relation to compliance with the New South Wales DSS and the quality of services provided. This chapter also examines the current monitoring processes for disability services and access to disability services data. Disability standards and legislation. 9.1. The New South Wales DSS and the Disability Services ACT 1993, New South Wales. The Act set the framework for the funding and provision of disability services in New South Wales. This policy and legislation also establishes the quality standards that disability services are required comply with in New South Wales. 9.2. Additional background to the New South Wales DSS and Disability Services ACT 1993 is provided in Chapter 2. 9.3. Some inquiry participants expressed concern that ADHC and funded services do not always comply with the New South Wales DSS or the Act, with regard to the quality of services that are provided to people with disability. These issues are explored in this section. Disability Service Standards. 9.4. Some inquiry participants told the committee that ADHC and funded organisations do not always act in compliance with the New South Wales DSS. 1. Key issues identified include the quality of some disability services staff, inadequate understanding of the New South Wales DSS, limited monitoring of compliance with the New South Wales DSS, and limited availability of mechanisms to address issues of non-compliance. 9.5. The ADHC submission stated that IT is a condition of ADHC's funding agreement that service providers comply with the New South Wales Disability Service Standards. 2. ADHC monitor service providers. Compliance with the funding agreement through the annual compliance return, ACR, which is described in Chapter 2. 9.6. The process used by ADHC to monitor the compliance of funded services with the New South Wales DSS is described in Chapter 2, as is the Quality Assurance and Improvement Program, CAPE. 9.7. The author of Submission 56 believes that the introduction of New South Wales DSS and legislation is a significant achievement by the government. However, in so many instances, these have become just words in rhetoric due to the lack of funding and resources to make it possible. 3. 9.8. The author of Submission 56 told the committee that ADHC are quick to quote the New South Wales DSS, but very slow in implementing them on the broader scale, specifically in the area of community access. 4. 9.9. Despite there being a requirement for individualized service provision under the New South Wales DSS, the author of Submission 74 stated that treatment by an ADHC caseworker made them feel pressured and stressed, and that an individualized service was not received. I feel the caseworker patronizes us and speaks to me like I'm stupid. She has pressured us to fulfill her time frame rather than what is best for in our family. She has remarked that transition to respite is the longest she has ever known, and I feel pressurized and stressed by her. It's clear we are just a number to her, as opposed to trying to provide us with an individualized service as per the disability service standards that ADHC is supposed to abide by. She seems quite focused on merely closing the referral and meeting ADHC needs first. 5. 9.10. The author of Submission 71, a mother and carer, also reported a poor quality of service from ADHC, which included being lied to and demeaned by her caseworker. ADHC have never been supportive of my and my child's life. We are constantly lied to. Their so-called services are never attending our needs. There is red tape on just about anything you can think of. I have never felt so demeaned as I have by my caseworkers and their management. I have never been promised things, and lied to as much as they have to me and my family. I have tried everything, from acquiring an advocate to involving my local MP6. 9.11. Additional issues regarding disability services staff are examined in Chapter 11. 9.12. The author of Submission 44 is a speech pathologist with New South Wales Health. This author identified the impact of poor quality service provision by ADHC on other government agencies and the reluctance of families to access ADHC services due to the perceived quality of services provided. ADHC's inability to meet the needs of children and families affects the care of children across health, education, disability, and non-government sectors. Some families are reluctant to have a formal assessment and diagnosis that will require transfer from health to ADHC. Families may withhold information about previous assessments and diagnosis in order to access health therapy services. Speech pathologists working in health receive many calls from parents and professionals asking us to see children with identified significant disability because they are not receiving adequate services via ADHC. 7.9.13. Services received in a group home were also criticised by the author of Submission 8 for not complying with the New South Wales DSS disability standards and ADHC own standards are non-existent in my personal group home. As far as an implementation of standards goes, when dealing with the area manager, I have to first talk, and then write CCing superiors and still receive a vague response. The system sets up residents to fail in personal needs and goals as these cannot be achieved without additional funding or resourcing. 8.9.14. The author of Submission 10 identified that non-compliance with the New South Wales DSS can put service users at risk. The author stated that the failure of ADHC to comply with their own standards caused our sister and the other household members to be put at risk. 9.9.15. The author of Submission 6 explained that her 8-year-old son who has autism, intellectual disability and is non-verbal, was left without behavioural support after she, the mother and carer, questioned the use of a restrictive procedure. Her style was simply not to take seriously the real and very distressing concerns we had regarding our son's well-being. It has since transpired that the restrictive procedure has in fact been abused on at least one occasion that we have written evidence of. The therapist in question certainly could never ever be described as family-centered or even flexible in my view. 10.9.16. Dr. Robert Leitner, chairperson of the Association of Doctors in Developmental Disability, ADID, agrees that ADHC and funded organizations do not always comply with the New South Wales DSS. Dr. Leitner stated that ADHC and especially NGOs may fall short with their compliance with the disability standards. 11.9.17. Different interpretations of the New South Wales DSS were also identified as an issue by inquiry participants. Ms. Mary Dallow, community planning coordinator from Maitland City Council, stated that service providers and service users' interpretations of the standards at times can differ. Whilst service providers' policy and procedures documents confirm they are complying, there are people with disabilities that would not agree. 12.9.18. The committee heard that inconsistent application of the New South Wales DSS can lead to confusion and frustration about the standard of service that can be expected. Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, explained that parents and carers often refer to the New South Wales DSS when they are trying to improve the services they are receiving. Ms. Berry stated many are often exasperated and express the standards are useless as they cannot be enforced. The sentiment is also expressed that they are used in a fashion that is restrictive, rather than which is of course the original intent of the standards. 13.9.19. Dr. Leitner identified that there is variation between ADHC central office policy and regional office practice in relation to the application of the New South Wales DSS. The policies from ADHC central office may not be reflected in the practices of the regional offices. Inconsistency in the implementation of policies between regional offices may disrupt service delivery. Example, a group home may not allow a resident with complex epilepsy to wear a safety helmet prescribed by a specialist neurologist on the grounds of restrictive practice, but another may allow the resident to wear the safety helmet on medical grounds. 14.9.20. Variation between central office policy and local implementation was also noted as an issue by Mr. Sean Lonis and Mr. Greg Killeen, Spinal Cord Injuries Australia. As an organisation that provides an advocacy service, we are consistently being made aware of some rather negative situations that people with a disability currently experience living in the community when in receipt of ADHD directly delivered services. Despite the positive wording of both the Disability Services Standards, DSS, and the Disability Services Act, DSA, there seems to be a breakdown between positively written, centrally created, ADHD policies and local management directing frontline staff. 15.9.21. It was not only service users that expressed their frustration with the New South Wales DSS. Service providers were also frustrated. An example provided to the committee was from Mr. Gary Blashk, the National President of the Disabled Surfers Association of Australia Incorporated, who conveyed his organisation's experience of complying with the New South Wales DSS. In 1986, the DSA, Disabled Surfers Association, wanted to be seen as complying with standards and subsequently applied to join the New South Wales Sports Council for the Disabled. Standards were in place and the DSA needed to comply to become a member group. It did not take long before the DSA realised that being a member was nothing more than ticking the correct boxes to make not only ourselves look like we were complying, it also helped make the bureaucracy fulfill their duty and again allow for further funding, whether they and member organisations were providing correctly for the disabled or not. 16. Responding to non-compliance. 9.22. Many inquiry participants expressed concern regarding the processes available to address issues of alleged non-compliance with the New South Wales DSS. The author of Submission 50 expressed concern about the way that ADHD responds to New South Wales DSS breaches. There is an expectation that ADHD should comply with disability service standards. However, we are greatly concerned that due to a lack of resources and/or the lack of willingness to listen to community complaints means that ADHD is not able to respond to breaches in their standards in a reasonable time frame, or in a reasonable manner in at least a significant proportion of cases. 17.9.23. Case Study X provides an example of a mother and carer whose experience of group home services have resulted in a lack of confidence in the capacity of the New South Wales DSS to provide quality services. Case Study X names oppressed. 18. It is my opinion what happened to my daughter and our family as a whole is a case of total system failure. We used every avenue and mechanism available to us in a vain hope of having our concerns and fears addressed, thoroughly investigated and acted upon. There were also professional people who also had their concerns for our daughter's welfare ignored and not acted upon. New South Wales Disability Services standards are not worth the paper they are written on if they are not rigidly followed and practicably applied in everyday service provision to clients. There needs to be a better system for enforcing and monitoring their use. There are too many people with disabilities and family/carers unaware of their very existence. There seems to be a lack of staff knowledge and training in the use and importance for not only complying with but implementing these standards in their everyday care role and service provision. Both ADHD and NGO names oppressed dismissed most all disability standards in their service provision to my daughter and our family, either has been held accountable, or has there been any consequences of their failings, which have adversely impacted on my daughter and others. Perhaps it should be mandatory for all service providers to not only display disability standards in their service, but to explain and provide information to service users and family/carers when first entering their service provision, explaining their rights and how the service endeavours to implement disability standards in their service provision and of their legal obligation in doing so. 9.24. Ms. Ross Armstrong, an official community visitor from the Official Community Visitor Scheme, explained that services are not monitored adequately in order to ensure that every service to a person with a disability meets the standards under which that accommodation service is auspiced. 19.9.25. The ADID believes that there is no transparent mechanism for managing agencies that are non-compliant with the disability standards. Even if an agency is clearly non-compliant, the problem appears to go unnoticed by ADHD. Dr. Leitner suggested that documentation regarding compliance with the standards should be publicly available. 29.26 Case Study X provides an example of how certain services provided by ADHC do not meet the New South Wales DSS and the Act. The issues regarding out-of-office hours support identified in this case study are addressed in more detail in Chapter 6, Case Study X Spinal Cord Injuries Australia 21. An example of ADHC not meeting the disability service standards would be out of ADHC office hours contact support, support required between 1600 and 0830. Up until recently the procedure was, if a carer had not turned up then you were pretty marginalised for that evening. This could be spending the night in a wheelchair, which is sadly quite a common occurrence, or even spending the night with your toileting not dealt with, leading to a heightened risk of infection through skin deterioration owing to prolonged exposure to moisture. If you required emergency support in the night for an event such as a blocked catheter, then you needed to call an ambulance. ADHC had not planned to provide a telephone number for staff to call to report that they were unwell and unable to fill a shift outside of hours, or for people receiving service to telephone the non-turn-up of the carer. Strangely enough, ADHC-funded services are required to provide this service. As this is a growing issue, local management are now endorsing an Option B model. This is basically that you need to have a friend on standby, as ADHC cannot guarantee service. The question is then, what if you have no friends or relatives, as sadly many isolated people in the community do not? Option B is no option for many people. In terms of compliance with the DSA, this case shows breach under 3(a), 3(b), 3(c), 3(e), and 3(f). Under the disability service standards we see a breach under 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, and 10. Committee comment 9.27. The committee understands that May service users have observed a lack of accountability and transparent mechanism to monitor and manage issues of non-compliance with regard to the New South Wales DSS. The committee understands that this has resulted in many service users feeling skeptical about the usefulness, effectiveness and the role of the New South Wales DSS in maintaining the quality of disability services. 9.28. The behaviour of some disability services staff is clearly not in compliance with the New South Wales DSS, including the ADHC caseworkers described by the authors of submissions 71 and 74. Issues regarding disability services staff are examined in more detail in Chapter 11, 9.29. The committee believes that the variation between ADHC Central Office and local implementation of New South Wales DSS policy is an issue that is required to be addressed, so that there is a more consistent understanding of what the standards mean and how they are required to be implemented. 9.30. The committee notes with concern the experience outlined in Case Study X, which identified a lack of staff knowledge and training in the use and implementation of the New South Wales DSS. The committee agrees that non-compliance increases the risk of service users receiving inappropriate services. 9.31. The committee notes the view of many inquiry participants that services are not monitored adequately to ensure that every disability service meets the New South Wales DSS. The committee acknowledges the concern expressed by inquiry participants that ADHC is not able to respond to breaches of the New South Wales DSS in a reasonable time frame, or in a reasonable manner in some cases. Complaints handling by ADHC is a significant concern to the committee, and is examined in detail later in this chapter. Disability Services ACT 1993, New South Wales. 9.32. The committee heard evidence regarding issues of non-compliance with the Disability Services ACT 1993, New South Wales. The Act 22. Key issues relate to the redevelopment of large residential centres, individual planning and inadequate action taken when the Act is breached. 9.33. Mr. Philip French, Director of the Disability Discrimination Legal Centre, stated that redevelopment of large residential centres is not in compliance with the Act. Mr. French also stated that, although ADHC claim the redevelopments conform to the Act, this claim has not been subject to independent merits review. Stronger Together states that the government will pursue a new accommodation policy and a range of new accommodation options. This includes the redevelopment of the Lachlan, Grosvenor and Peat Island centres, and of Ferguson Lodge, each non-conforming institutional accommodation services. And Stronger Together, the government claims that these developments will be consistent with contemporary accommodation and care standards, and will comply with the New South Wales Disability Services ACT 1993. However, in reality, these redevelopments represent a reversion to service models that congregate, segregate and isolate persons with disability from the community, and very obviously fail to conform to the requirements of the DSA, Disability Services Act, New South Wales. ADHC's failure or refusal to administer funding for these services in accordance with Division 2 of the DSA has the purpose or effect of preventing merits review of these redevelopment decisions. That was the application in Pitt Island. So while ADHC claims these redevelopments conform to the DSA New South Wales, it has in reality done everything in its power to prevent that claim from being subject to independent merits review. 23.9.34. In the report People with Disabilities and the Closure of Residential Centres, Mr. Bruce Barber, the New South Wales Ombudsman, also stated that residential centres cannot comply with the Act because of the nature of institutional care. Residential centres are funded under the Disability Services ACT 1993, which, among other things, requires services to be provided to people with disabilities in a way that results in the least restriction of their rights and opportunities. Numerous reports and inquiries have found that residential centres in New South Wales do not fully conform to the DSA and are incapable of doing so. This is because the nature of institutional care, including the segregation of the centres from the broader community and the structured and inflexible routines, restricts the rights and opportunities of the people with disabilities who live in these settings. 24.9.35. Additional issues. Large residential centres are examined in Chapter 7. 9.36. Ms. Christine Regan, Senior Policy Officer, National Council of Social Services, NCOS, New South Wales, also believes that services such as those provided through large residential centres do not comply with the Act. She stated that NCOS shares the view of many people with disability and their families, as well as disability advocacy organisations and others in the disability sector, that large groups of people with disability living on one site with shared supports does not comply with either the spirit or the letter of the New South Wales Disability Services Act. 25.9.37. Ms. Ross Armstrong, official community visitor, identified further element of disability service provision that do not meet the requirements of the Act, including individual planning, privacy, dignity, and confidentiality, respect and valued status, dignity of risk and areas of financial management. She stated, based on standards in action practice requirements and guidelines for services funded under the Act, official community visitors still report instances where service supports do not meet DSA requirements. Some common areas include individual planning, privacy, dignity, and confidentiality, respect and valued status, dignity of risk and areas of financial management. Official community visitors believe that these issues are in most cases due to lack of policies, oversight, lack of supervision of poorly trained staff and staff attitude. 26.9.38. The United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, UNCRDP, signifies a shift away from a social welfare response to people with disabilities to a rights-based response. Ms. Berry explained that many states have amended disability service legislation to emphasize the rights of people with disability and the importance of a person-centered approach, and stated that this approach would also be welcomed in New South Wales. Across Australia, there is an increasing emphasis on the rights of people with disability and the importance of person-centered approaches to the development and delivery of service responses. Some jurisdictions have recently revised their disability services legislation to further emphasize the rights of people with disability and their place at the center of service provision. There are a few key pieces of legislation in particular: the Disability Services Act in Western Australia, the Disability Services Act in Queensland, and the Disability Act in Victoria. I think it is no accident that these jurisdictions, that are probably the more innovative, namely Victoria, Western Australia and Queensland, have amended the legislation in order to further rights objectives. This would be a very welcome development in New South Wales. Many jurisdictions are implementing reforms to make their service systems more person-centered, and many have developed key policy and strategy documents that reflect this focus on the individual. 27. How could compliance with legislation and the New South Wales DSS be improved? 9.39. While the committee heard of many instances where services were non-compliant with the Act and New South Wales DSS, Some participants also offered suggestions for ways to improve compliance. Mr. Martin Laverty, chairman of the board, the Lorna Hodgkins and Sunshine Home, recommended that a research and development advisory group be established to improve the quality of disability services provided in New South Wales. He stated that a research and development advisory group be established by ADHC comprising equal numbers of ADHC staff, service provider representatives, and independent community members with terms of reference to assess and commission research and policy creation that will lead to innovation and improvements in the quality of services provided to people with disabilities. 28.9.40. The author of Submission 14 expressed concern that there is no accountability and little action taken against services that breach legislation, and recommended that an independent arbitrator is established to investigate serious complaints about services. I believe this highlights an urgent need for accountability, greater regulation and improved monitoring of both ADHC, and in particular non-government accommodation and respite services directly funded by ADHC. There is a need for a new system to be developed, such as an independent arbitrator with legislated powers to fully and comprehensively investigate serious complaints about both government and non-government services. For example, as in cases of breaches of New South Wales disability service standards, the use of restricted practices, and the non-compliance with practices, procedures and guidelines which govern these issues. At the moment there seems to be no accountability extracted, and little action of any real consequence taken against a service provider that has breached legislated imperatives, which are tantamount to human rights abuse. 29.9.41. Mr. Lomas and Mr. Colleen recommended that an independent auditor is appointed to conduct an assessment both at ADHC head office and in each of the regional offices. This assessment should also include service recipients' experiences. 30. The independent assessment would assess compliance with all current disability service standards and the Disability Services Act. 9.42. The issue regarding establishment an independent organisation to address compliance with the New South Wales DSS and the Act is examined in more detail from section 9.59. 9.43. Ms. Sue Crane, Advocacy and Research Officer, Vision Australia, explained that different states have different services standards and that preparing for multiple assessments is time-consuming and costly and most importantly takes staff away from service delivery to clients. She suggested a national standard be developed and implemented. Vision Australia believes that it would be advantageous to look to replace all state-specific disability standards with the National Disability Service Standard. A national standard should mean the one compliance assessment system, which must be easy and manageable. Where a compliance assessment has been completed within the reporting or assessment period, these results should be accepted or considered in subsequent audits by other service performance audits. 31.9.44. A standalone standard that relates to culturally appropriate service delivery was recommended by Mr. Damien Griffiths, Executive Officer, Aboriginal Disability Network. 32.9.45. In order to assist staff own the standards, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, ADHC, explained that ADHC is developing fact sheets and simple language resources to explain the requirements imposed on staff, as well as developing policies that formally translate the standards into requirements imposed on staff and service providers. ADHC is committed to promoting a culture of respect for the rights of people with disabilities. Workers who provide services directly to clients need to understand the principles on which standards are based and the way they should inform their day-to-day work. ADHC is developing a series of fact sheets and simple language resources that will assist residential support workers, staff of funded service providers and other frontline staff to own the standards. 33.9.46. Mr. Moore also explained that a quality framework is being developed that is underpinned by the National Standards for Disability Services. ADHC is working with National Disability Services, NDS, New South Wales to develop a quality framework for disability services in New South Wales. The quality framework aims to ensure that people with a disability, their family and carers receive high-quality services that deliver positive outcomes and support them to participate as valued members of the community. The quality framework is built on the UN Convention on Rights of Persons with Disabilities and is underpinned by the National Standards for Disability Services. 34. 9.47. The quality framework places responsibility on service providers to demonstrate compliance against the standards through a process of self-assessment, independent assessment or accreditation by a third party. The ADHC submission provided detail on how the framework will assist the industry. The quality framework allows service providers to assess the effectiveness of service operations and identify areas for improvement. ADHC is currently establishing a program to refresh, enhance, and develop tools and resources to support the implementation of the quality framework. This work is being undertaken with the sector through the Industry Development Program. These resources will provide service providers with information on recognized assessment tools, quality management systems, and a guide on recognized third-party accreditation bodies. One resource will include an interactive model of the Standards in Action guide with hyperlinks to policy and good practice, so service providers can continuously improve service delivery outcomes for people with disability. 35. Committee comment. 9.48. The committee recognises the fundamental importance of the New South Wales DSS and the Disability Services ACT 1993 in providing a foundation for the quality of services provided to people with disability in New South Wales. Examples of non-compliance with the New South Wales DSS and the Act by ADHC and funded organisations are of significant concern to the committee. 9.49. The committee agrees with Mr. Griffiths that a new disability service standard that requires culturally appropriate services to be delivered should be developed and implemented. This new standard would also assist in addressing some of the issues identified in Chapters 4 and 5. The committee recommends that the New South Wales DSS are revised to include a requirement for culturally appropriate services to be delivered. Recommendation 1. That the Minister for Disability Services revises the New South Wales Disability Service Standards to include a new standard that requires culturally appropriate services to be delivered. 9.50. The committee is very concerned that the decision to redevelop large residential centres has not been subject to independent merits review, and that the decision to redevelop these centres is not in compliance with relevant legislation. Further examination of this issue and relevant recommendation regarding residential centres are provided in Chapter 7. 9.51. The committee acknowledges the work that ADHC is undertaking to improve the use of the New South Wales DSS within the agency, including developing policies, fact sheets and simple language resources for staff. The committee notes that ADHC require service providers to annually self-assess against the funding agreement through the ACR. It is also recognised that ADHC use the CAPE to monitor its own delivery of services. 9.52. However, a limitation of the ACR is that it is not designed to handle complaints as they arise throughout the year, for example in relation to concerns expressed about non-compliance with the New South Wales DSS. The committee believes that a transparent and consistent process is required to ensure that issues of non-compliance are adequately addressed, to provide service users, carers and their families with an avenue to improve service quality. Examination of complaints processes is provided later in this chapter. 9.53. The committee has not received evidence to identify how ADHC provided services are monitored for compliance with the New South Wales DSS, including through the CAPE. However, the committee notes that all disability services are required to comply with the New South Wales DSS, and it is therefore essential that services provided by ADHC are monitored for compliance, and that non-compliance is addressed as efficiently and effectively as possible. 9.54. The recommendation by Spinal Cord Injuries Australia and the author of Submission 14 to establish an independent organisation to monitor ADHC and funded organisations for compliance with the New South Wales DSS is supported by the committee. This issue and recommendation is examined in the next section. 9.55. The committee acknowledges that a quality framework is being developed by ADHC to improve the quality of services provided to people with disability, carers and their families. The committee believes that the framework needs to address the significant gap that exists between the theoretical standards, the practical implementation of the standards and compliance monitoring. 9.56. The committee recommends that tools are developed as part of the framework for both ADHC and funded organisation staff to work towards embedding the New South Wales DSS in their daily work. These tools should act to increase awareness of the standards improve staff and service users' understanding of the standards and how they apply to service delivery. Without the development of practical tools and a process to monitor compliance, the committee is concerned that the quality framework will become another theoretical policy layer that does not address the serious issues identified by inquiry participants. 9.57. The committee strongly supports the development of an independent third-party accreditation process for disability service providers, including ADHC, as this should strengthen the quality of services provided, improve the consistency of services provided, and improve transparency of monitoring for compliance with the New South Wales DSS. In the next section on complaints handling, the committee has recommended that an independent organisation be established to monitor and accredit the disability services sector. See Recommendation 44. Complaint handling. 9.58. This section examines the effectiveness of disability service complaint and grievance handling by ADHC and funded organizations. This was identified as an issue by many inquiry participants, for reasons including poor adherence to complaint policy, poor access to relevant policy and processes by deaf and blind people, complaints not being taken seriously, inadequate responses to complaints, fear of retribution by service users who express complaints, including threats of services being withdrawn, and lack of involvement by ADHC in complaints about funded organizations. 9.59. Ms. Susan Smith, Coordinator, Disability Information Advocacy Service, identified that the New South Wales DSS, Standard Number 7, relates to how complaints and disputes should be handled. It states that each consumer is free to raise and have resolved any complaints or disputes he or she may have regarding the agency or the service. 36.9.60. In evidence, Mr. Moore advised the committee that funded organizations are required to maintain a complaint handling process through the requirement to comply with the New South Wales DSS. We require all non-government organizations, through our funding agreement, to comply with disability standards, one of which is about complaints and disputes resolution. So through that vehicle we place upon them an obligation to maintain a complaints handling process and to handle disputes appropriately. The first port of call for somebody to come to us is we would be going back to the non-government organization to understand whether or not the complaints handling process had been done well enough. 37.9.61. Ms. Emily Kasker, State Policy Coordinator, National Disability Service, views complaints handling and grievance mechanisms as a key driver in service planning, delivery and evaluation. 38. She stated that NDS sees effective complaints handling and grievance mechanisms as being part of an organization's governance procedures to measure service outcomes and identify areas for quality improvement. 39.9.62. Mr. Moore told the committee that the complaints system is not perfect, but there are a number of vehicles that are available for people to have their service quality tested, or to complain about it and have an independent treatment of it. 40. Access to complaint handling. 9.63. The committee was informed by ADHC that the majority of complaints received in the first 3 months of 2010 related to home care services. A recent complaints data analysis for the period between January and March 2010 showed that 246 complaints were received by ADHC. Of these, about 90% of complaints were related to services provided by home care. Improvements are being made to simplify and streamline processes for reporting complaints, which will increase consistency, timeliness to respond, and resolve and improve customer satisfaction with the handling of complaints. This will ensure ADHC meets all element of current industry standard. 41.9.64. In the committee's opinion, given the large number of clients and services accessed, 246 complaints in the first quarter of 2010 is very low. Mr. Moore also acknowledged that it is low, and that ADHC does not capture enough complaints through its formal complaints mechanisms. I do not think that we get near as many complaints through our formal complaints mechanism as we would want. There is only one area of our business where there is a significant body of complaint, and that is in the Home Care Service of New South Wales. I do not think that is a reflection necessarily of us doing less work in other parts of our organization, but it is just that they are much more efficient at counting complaints as complaints. 42.9.65. However, Mr. Moore also referred to a separate biennial survey of home care client satisfaction, which indicated approximately 95% satisfaction with the Home Care Service of New South Wales. "We get client satisfaction in the levels of 95% plus in those surveys. Yes, there are about 600 complaints that we received in 2009, 662 to be precise, about the home care service, and that has to sit alongside a very positive overall relationship to the home care service of those clients, but we do not believe that we get it right. I think that that number of complaints, when you are dealing with 55,000 of the number of clients of Home Care Service of New South Wales, that with a 95% to 97% satisfaction rate is probably a good indication of what is not working for individuals." 43.9.66. Mr. Moore stated that there is no such survey for the rest of the service system, and that ADHC is endeavouring to work out what is the best way to try to gather that information. 44.9.67. The committee was told repeatedly by individuals who access disability services either personally or on behalf of a family member that complaints processes are difficult to access and or have unsatisfactory outcomes. The limited availability of complaint processes in regional areas was raised by Ms. Amelia Stair, Senior Policy Officer, Disability Council of New South Wales. The comments about the complaint handling did come up in the consultations, "Where do we go with we are not happy with the service?" That was certainly amplified in the discussions we had in regional areas, where it is sometimes, "We have got nowhere else to go but the service we are using." 45.9.68. The ability for ADHC to address concerns raised by organisations was identified by the Deaf Society as adequate. However, the same did not apply to clients, according to the Chief Executive Officer of the Deaf Society, who stated in her submission, "If, or clients, we can identify a serious problem in the accessibility of ADHC complaint mechanisms for deaf service users." 46.9.69. Spinal Cord Injuries Australia also identified that it is difficult for individuals to have their complaints responded to effectively. Complaints against staff, providers and ADHC rarely seem to go answered when delivered by an individual. It is our thinking that complaints are healthy as they allow service development to happen. An advocate fulfills a very important role in driving quality service. 47.9.70. At the committee's public forum, held to hear some of the personal experiences of the disability service sector, Ms. Judy Brosses read out a statement on behalf of her father, Mr. Ivor Russell Nyman. He stated that he felt that his concerns were simply brushed aside by ADHC and not adequately addressed. "The result of this behavior is that my daughter became so distressed that she, the victim, had to be temporarily removed from her home and moved to a safe group home. This has added to her anxiety as she does not understand why she is the one that was removed." In spite of frequent submissions to ADHC by the families of the three original residents, stating that the residents could be in danger of injury and they now live under constant tension and intimidation, ADHC have brushed aside all complaints and refused to find more suitable accommodation for the newest resident. 48.9.71. Ms. Brosses, the sister and legal guardian of her sister who has Down syndrome, told the committee that she felt an apprehended violence order was her only option to safeguard her sister against a service user who had been inappropriately transitioned into the group home. Ms. Brosses stated that it was only then that they paid any attention to our complaints. 49.9.72. Another forum participant, Ms. Jennifer Alloam, identified that parents can be afraid to complain about inadequate service provision for fear of retribution. When they are afraid their children will lose the inadequate service they are getting, you know that the alternative is no service at all. 50.9.73. Being fearful of a reduction in services was also identified by Fairfield Seniors Network as a reason why individuals may not complain. They stated that any seniors comment that they feel unable to complain as they feel that services may be affected if they do. 51.9.74. Mr. John Paul Kerr is a service user who feels that his complaints were not taken seriously by ADHC or handled appropriately. After making a complaint, Mr. Kerr stated he received threats to have his service withdrawn. All that was fine, until I had my own complaints or grievances. I went from a respected contributing member of society to a second-class citizen who was not taken seriously by the ADHC at any level, and frankly I just can't take it anymore. If I had been employed by the ADHC I may have been treated better as a whistleblower under the Protected Disclosures Act, but instead I was subjected to threats to withdraw my services, disruptions in my services etc., all designed to just wear me down. 52.9.75. Mr. Mark K. also described the significant impact on him when, as a staff member of ADHC, he complained about issues within the agency. Mr. K. explained that he felt punished by ADHC for making a complaint, that there was no one to turn to and his health was negatively affected by his experience. He has been on leave since this incident in 2008, even though the executive in question has been promoted several times since then. In fact, all the participants in this travesty have been promoted. 53.9.76. The author of Submission 14, a mother and carer to her daughter Amy, believes that ADHC did not follow policy or procedures for complaint handling when issues were raised about the quality of care provided to Amy in a group home. She stated that here is clearly no clear avenue for service users to make complaints about support staff as to have any hope of being taken seriously, or even listened to. There is often fear of retribution by staff. 54. This inquiry participant stated that this clearly shows breaches of legislated disability standards and restrictive practices with no accountability extracted from the service provider or their auspice authority ADHC. 55.9.77. Mr. Mark K. also described the significant impact on him when, as a staff member of ADHC, he complained about issues within the agency. Mr. K. explained that he felt punished by ADHC for making a complaint, that there was no one to turn to and his health was negatively affected by his experience. He has been on leave since this incident in 2008, even though the executive in question has been promoted several times since then. In fact, all the participants in this travesty have been promoted. 56.9.78. Another concern identified by the author of Submission 14 relates to the issue that ADHC does not have authority to directly investigate complaints about the very services it chooses to fund. She stated, "The mechanisms for handling complaints concerning ADHC-funded services are totally inadequate. ADHC refers complaints back to the service provider, so effectively allowing an internal investigation with often little or no consequences. There is the National Abuse and Complaints Hotline, which only has the power to record a complaint, not investigate. It is merely a referral agency. Referrals are then sent on to the New South Wales Ombudsman for investigation. It is a slow process which in our case took over 2 months before the Ombudsman received and commenced action." 57.9.79. Ms. Berry also identified that ADHC's complaint handling mechanisms are inadequate, and that it is not clear how complaints received by ADHC contribute to improving service delivery. "Clients have reported through our information service that complaint handling and grievance mechanisms within the department are poor. Many of our members and callers to our organization have systemic complaints about the department, but the department seems to have few effective mechanisms and limited motivation to channel these complaints toward improved service delivery." 58.9.80. Particular difficulties for people with vision impairment were pointed out to the committee by Ms. Crane, who explained that ADHC's complaint process is not easily accessible for a person who is blind or has low vision. "Initially it is difficult to find the complaint section of the ADHC website. Then having located it, the feedback and complaint handling principles and guidelines are only available in PDF, which is not the most accessible format for a person who is blind and uses synthetic speech screen readers to access documentation. The ADHC complaint form is also not easy to navigate with the screen reader." 59.9.81. Ms. Kasker also explained that ADHC's current policies are not accessible to service users and restrict access and use of the complaints handling process. "ADHC /S feedback and complaint handling principles and guidelines support complainants requiring assistance after making their initial complaint through the provision of advocates and interpreters, but the accompanying information sheet 1, making a complaint, and information sheet 2, complaint process are not appropriate for service users in terms of format, language, and information provided, and therefore inhibit access to the complaints handling process from the outset. 69.82 Ms. Estelle Shields, a mother and carer, stated that when she attempted to express concern about an ADHC-funded organization with ADHC, she was advised that ADHC does not field complaints about NGOs, non-government organizations. 61.9.83 Case Study X illustrates issues in ADHC's complaint handling processes experienced by the Noon family. According to the evidence received by the committee, the complaints expressed by this family were not taken seriously until they involved the Ombudsman, an apprehended violence order, and wrote letter to members of Parliament. Issues identified in this case study include a culture of blame shifting, the lengthy time it takes to address issues, and the impact on the service user as a result of poor complaint handling. Case Study X, Ms. Valerie Noon. 62. It has become very apparent to us that the complaint handling process in ADHC is badly flawed, and ADHC uses this to its advantage. The first major flaw is the culture of blame shifting that exists throughout the department. It is difficult to get a complaint looked at when all it wants to do is shift the blame onto someone else and does not want to look at the situation objectively. An example of this is when ADHC would tell us that it was its job to support the service provider and that it was the service provider's job to manage the situation. It was suggested that maybe the service provider was not doing its job properly. Another proposal was that my sister could receive counseling for fear. Another flaw is the way the process has dragged on for weeks and months with what is euphemistically referred to as ongoing discussions. This became particularly distressing while all the time we felt our sister was in danger of being harmed when she remained in the house. This dragging out of the complaint process was achieved in a number of ways. Firstly, we were called to meetings, but then told at the meetings that those present from ADHC did not have the authority to make decisions, that they would report the content of the discussions to their boss. This then resulted in more meetings and ongoing discussions with no resolution of the complaint. Secondly, we have been told that a particular matter that we wanted to discuss would have to be taken up with someone else from another section of ADHC, and not the section we were currently dealing with. It is a sad fact that we never made any real progress with our complaint with ADHC until we introduced external pressures, which included the following: a detailed letter of complaint to the Office of the Ombudsman outlining ADHC's failure to follow its own policies. This process has also taken several months and has resulted in the ongoing interest of the Ombudsman, but still without a resolution. The second thing was an apprehended violence order which was taken out on my sister's behalf against the new resident. This proved to be quite effective in gaining their attention, and we did get to meet with some people who could make decisions. We also wrote to various members of Parliament and made a submission to this inquiry. What I would like to know is, why is it needed to go to such extreme lengths to get a complaint taken seriously? 9.84 The author of Submission 56 expressed frustration at their experience of ADHC's complaint handling system. This author stated that false information was provided to the minister, there was not option of a review of how the grievance process, and there were no face-to-face meetings to address the issues. 63.9.85 The experiences of complaint handling by carers are also examined in Chapter 10. What is required to improve ADHC's complaint handling process? 9.86 Mr. Noel Bohm, Director Policy, Local Government and Shires Association of New South Wales, believes that councils could benefit from increased promotion of ADHC grievance processes and improved internal understanding of how to address complaints. Some councils' experiences with ADHC regional office and central office problem solving and feedback have unfortunately been poor. Many of the separate teams within the department seem to lack any formalized communication and information exchange between them. This results in councils being transferred to a number of different sections within ADHC. There seems to be a lack of understanding of the division of roles and responsibilities between planning, projects and funding teams. 64.9.87 Ms. Adeline Hodgkinson, Director and Chair, New South Wales Agency for Clinical Innovation, also believes that further clarity is required regarding ADHC's complaint handling and grievance mechanism processes. ADHC has not made it clear what their grievance mechanism / complaint handling procedures are for non-funded services. Their website is confusing and ineffective. We are unable to locate adequate information about services who to contact, instruction about how to apply for services or any other support information such as grievance/complaints handling process. This information is usually known by a senior BLRP team member, EGG social worker or case manager. 65.9.88. Ms. Kaska stated that information about complaint handling processes must be widespread and accessible. She identified that the New South Wales Ombudsman Complaint Handling at Universities Best Practice Guidelines is a good resource regarding how to publicise complaint handling systems. It is fundamental to the effective operation of any complaint handling system that there is widespread, if not universal, knowledge of the system and ready access to comprehensive information about its processes. The New South Wales Ombudsman Complaint Handling at Universities Best Practice Guidelines identifies ways in which the complaint handling system should be publicised, such as up-to-date website information with user-friendly links, complaints process flowcharts and information in induction procedures for both staff and students. 66.9.89. Dealing with complaints more quickly was recommended by Mr. Maximum Bisotti, Chief Executive Officer, Paraplegic and Quadriplegic Association, who also recommended that there should be an option of having the complaints raised outside of the service delivery environment. Complaints forwarded to ADHC staff from services are often well received, however there appears to be delayed action on following up matters raised. Where individual clients voice concerns, their complaints appear to be dealt with quickly, so as not to cause political damage. Our experience with external advocacy services has identified that there is great opportunities for individuals to raise concerns outside the service arena, which is a concept that Paraquad would support. In the past year we have worked well with the Office of the Ombudsman and Multicultural Disability Advocacy Service 67.9.90. The National Disability Services New South Wales submission stated that improved mechanisms need to be implemented to assist accessing, investigating, and resolving complaints. The submission identified that there are limited resources for service providers to respond to a complaint and issues regarding the impartiality and confidentiality of complaints that are unable to be resolved at the local level. NDS supports the development of quality frameworks and mechanisms for accessing, investigating, and resolving consumer complaints. NDS New South Wales is concerned that the current policy for the management of complaints and feedback provides limited resources for service providers responding to a complaint. NDS New South Wales is also concerned about the impartiality and confidentiality of complaints that are unable to be resolved at the local level. NDS believes that greater inclusion of services provider rights, as well as greater access to complaint handling information and training, would deliver better outcomes for the parties involved. 68.9.91. Ms. Sharon Everson, Chief Executive Officer, the Deaf Society, recommended that key policies and complaints processes be provided in Australian Sign Language to allow deaf people improved to access these policies. We are proud of our own feedback and complaints policy, training and practices, but if a client wants to approach ADHC to complain, especially if they wish to do so without our help, they would face significant barriers. We believe it would be helpful if ADHC were to provide Australian Sign Language, or SLAN, translations of key policies and processes such as the complaints process and the disability service standards on their website. This would allow clients better access to complaints mechanisms outside DSNSW, Deaf Society New South Wales, and would be in line with Australia's obligations under the UNCRPD, United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. 69.9.92. Improved availability of translated policies on the ADHC website was also suggested by Ms. Everson as a way to bring the accessibility of ADHC policies in line with the UNCRPD. That ADHC make it a priority to provide Auslan translations of complaints procedures and the disability service standards on the ADHC website, and that these be promoted to deaf people. This is in line with accessibility requirements under Article 9 of the UNCRPD, which Australia has ratified. 70.9.93. Mr. Michael Hart experienced poor complaint handling by ADHC, and recommends that any review look into how complaints are brushed aside, and how complaints public servants are allowed to lie even up to the agency chief executive level. 71. Advocacy Services 9.94. Ms. Berry believes that individual advocacy services are required to be expanded as a matter of urgency to improve services, provided to people with disability. This would only add to improvements in the system, especially if an agency were funded to undertake individual advocacy, and then collate issues into groups, to allow for systemic feedback to the department specifically. This would lead to improved service provision and client satisfaction, especially if the department also improved its own internal mechanisms in line with advice provided from an independent source. 72.9.95. Mr. Michael Hart experienced poor complaint handling by ADHC, and recommends that any review look into how complaints are brushed aside, and how complaints public servants are allowed to lie even up to the agency chief executive level. 73.9.96. Limitations on funding for advocacy services mean it is hard for the services to complete the role they are required to within available funding. The Council on the Aging New South Wales and the Physical Disability Council of New South Wales recommended that increased funding for advocacy services is required. There is presently not enough funding for advocacy services in New South Wales to perform the tasks that they have been funded for. There needs to be a commitment from the New South Wales Government and ADHC to peak bodies across the sector, particularly in relation to systemic advocacy. There are systemic problems with the current complaint handling and grievance mechanisms. Over recent years, there has been a lack of organisational funding to community advocacy services, severe over-demand for these services, poor recruitment and retention of advocates both employed and volunteers, and a lack of clarity to the New South Wales Ombudsman's role, purpose and investigative powers in regards to government services. These issues must be addressed and rectified. 74.9.97. Ms. Smith, Coordinator, Disability Information Advocacy Service, recommended that advocacy support should be provided by organizations that do not also undertake service provision to promote strong and effective independent advocacy. Ms. Smith stated that this would minimize the possibility or the perception of conflict of interest. 75.9.98. Conflicts of interest are examined further from Section 9.127. 9.99. Mr. Mark Grierson, Chief Executive Officer, Disability Advocacy New South Wales, explained that advocacy is an important independent safeguard to ensure people with disability are treated fairly. Advocacy provides a crucial independent safeguard mechanism to ensure that people with a disability are not subjected to unfair treatment. Good local advocates can identify instances of unfair treatment, bring it to the attention of key decision makers and service providers, then negotiate better outcomes for people with a disability. 76.9.100. Ms. Gillian McDonald from the Aged Care Rights Service recommended that ADHC should fund advocacy services for older people in New South Wales, including services that assist these people in making complaints. 77.9.101. Ms. Gillian McDonald from the Aged Care Rights Service recommended that ADHC should fund advocacy services for older people in New South Wales, including services that assist these people in making complaints. 78. An independent complaints body. 9.102. Many inquiry participants called for a new independent complaints and review body to be established. The Council on the Aging New South Wales and the Physical Disability Council of New South Wales submission recommended that an independent body should be established to oversee and monitor the quality assurance process and replace the current practices with a more accountable system of review and evaluation. 79.9.103. Ms. Noon stated that ADHC is not held accountable for the implementation of their policies or practices and that an independent tribunal is required to address complaints. Ms. Noon believes that this independent organization would assist in addressing complaints for people without fear of negative repercussions on their services. One of the major reasons for this is that there is no means by which ADHC can be held accountable for their actions or decisions. ADHC needs to be held accountable for their own policies and practices without loophole clauses. I believe there needs to be an independent tribunal set up to deal with the complaints. ADHC is responsible for the well-being of some of the most vulnerable members of our society. Many of them have no voice to defend them. It has been a long and frustrating journey for me and my family, but I do fear for those who have no one to defend them. I hope as a result of this forum that there will be an independent body created to arbitrate complaints without the fear of negative repercussions. 80.9.104. The official community visitors also believe that there should be an independent body tasked with monitoring the services provided to people with disability. I am happy to make a statement on behalf of all my peers and official community visitors. There is a pretty unified view that there should be a body that monitors services to people with disabilities, a body that is independent of the funder of those services. 81.9.105. The recommendation was also put forward by the National Disability Service New South Wales in their submission, which highlights the need for an independent, objective, and accountable external review source to ensure that complaints are handled appropriately. An important key practice for the efficiency benchmark is ensuring complaints are dealt with by the appropriate process or forum. ADHC provides external review contacts as part of its feedback and complaint handling principles and guidelines, namely the New South Wales Ombudsman, the National Disability Abuse and Neglect Hotline, the Independent Commission Against Corruption, the Administrative Decisions Tribunal and the Anti-Discrimination Board. NDS is concerned that staff in these external organizations may not be aware of alternate complaint resolution schemes. NDS emphasizes the importance of an independent, objective, and accountable external review source. 82.9.106. Mr. Moore stated that service users have access to the New South Wales Ombudsman to complain about disability service provision. In addition to the ability to utilize our complaints system, which I will again say I do not think is near well enough utilized, people with a disability and their family have access to the Ombudsman, and the New South Wales Ombudsman is, for us, a very important part of the process of being able to run a system that is seen as being independent and effective, because we will remain the funder of a service that person is complaining about. The Ombudsman provides us with a vehicle whereby someone independent of all of us is forming a view about the complaint. 83.9.107. However, service users such as Mr. Kerr do not feel that the New South Wales Ombudsman adequately helped to address his complaint. I followed the advice of the Ombudsman's office and exhausted all internal avenues of complaint, but the system didn't work. It exists but it is ignored, and there is nothing you can do to help yourself. If you are a consumer of the substandard services provided by DADHC, I even became aware that an arrangement may exist between DADHC and the Office of the Ombudsman, on a small scale, where complaints phoned in by consumers were not handled using proper procedures, but phone calls were exchanged to resolve matters, therefore minimizing the numbers of complaints recorded about DADHC. Specific consumers labeled as difficult complainants, who won't let go, and nuisance complainants with unreal expectations. 84.9.108. Reasons why the New South Wales Ombudsman may not be able to appropriately address disability service issues were suggested in the Council on the Aging New South Wales and the Physical Disability Council of New South Wales submission. The Ombudsman's office has undergone significant reform in recent years. These reforms included a reduction in budget, a reduction in the legal powers of the Ombudsman to compel agencies to adopt recommendations, and the absorption of other similar organizations such as the Community Services Commission. This has forced significantly cut back on the amount of complaints the Ombudsman's office is able to process whilst expanding their role. This has its own risks in relation to the openness, transparency, and accountability of all agencies watched by the Ombudsman, and particularly for the handling of complaints by the public. The reduction of the ability of the Ombudsman to handle complaints is of significant concern to PDCN and COTA, as it is the primary means of ensuring the openness, transparency, and accountability in the disability sector. Since the discontinuation of the Community Service Commission and replacing it with the establishment of a disability branch within the Office of the New South Wales Ombudsman in 2002. As such, PDCN and COTA fear that the office is unable to give the disability sector the focus/attention that it requires. 85. Committee comment. 9.109. The committee acknowledges the frustration experienced by many service users regarding the poor complaint handling processes implemented by ADHC and funded organizations. Adequate policies and processes to effectively handle complaints are essential in ensuring compliance with the New South Wales DSS, and in providing service users, carers and their families with an avenue to report poor quality service and have these issues effectively addressed. The committee is not convinced that current ADHC policies and practices fulfill this need, and strongly believes that ADHC's complaint handling policies are required to be reviewed. The New South Wales Ombudsman Complaint Handling at Universities Best Practice Guidelines should be referred to in the review of ADHC's complaint handling policies and processes. 9.110. The committee understands that there are currently many barriers in place that prevent people from accessing information about disability service complaints processes, lodging a complaint, and having it resolved appropriately. These barriers include poorly publicized processes, inaccessible language and formats, and a lack of options to review the outcome of complaint handling processes. 9.111. The committee understands that internal communication within ADHC regarding complaint handling is sometimes perceived to be inadequate. The committee believes that the confusion of ADHC staff regarding how to handle complaints could reduce the effectiveness of how complaints are addressed. 9.112. The committee believes that ADHC and funded organization staff should be aware of how to effectively handle complaints in a timely manner. If staff are confused by complaint handling procedures, it is little wonder that service users are also dissatisfied with this system. The committee recommends that the complaint handling policy review includes, as a priority, the implementation of staff training and appropriate resources for the staff of funded organizations. 9.113. The committee strongly agrees that the disability service sector would benefit from the establishment of an independent organization to handle complaints about ADHC provided and funded services. The committee notes that this was also suggested in paragraph 9.132 as a means to monitor compliance with the Act. Establishing an independent organization will also address the issues regarding the perceived or actual conflict of interest that result from ADHC's role, which is examined in more detail from section 9.127. 9.114. The committee believes that establishing an independent organization to monitor the services provided to people with disability would improve the resources available to ADHC for planning, funding, and providing services. Recommendation 2. That the Minister for Disability Services conduct a review of complaint and grievance handling policy and procedures for disability services in New South Wales, and that the review be conducted in consultation with relevant stakeholders, including service users and carers. Provides ADHC complaint policy in a format that is accessible to all service users, including people who are deaf and visually impaired. Ensures ADHC complaint policy is easy to locate on the internet. Develops processes to ensure that complaints are addressed in a timely manner. Refers to the New South Wales Ombudsman Complaint Handling at Universities Best Practice Guidelines when identifying how to improve complaint handling policies and processes. Identifies and addresses gaps in complaint handling between agencies such as ADHC and the New South Wales Ombudsman. Implements staff training and develops appropriate resources for funded organizations to improve understanding of complaint handling processes. That the review report and actions resulting from the review are published on ADHC's website. Recommendation 3. That the New South Wales Government establish an independent organisation to monitor the quality of disability services provided and funded by ADHC, handle complaints about the provision of services for issues that are not within the responsibility of organisations such as the New South Wales Ombudsman, monitor compliance with the New South Wales Disability Service Standards and the Disability Services ACT 1993 through providing accreditation to organisations that provide disability services in accordance with the standards. Evaluation and monitoring. 9.115. Program evaluation and disability service monitoring are examined in this section in relation to the effectiveness of these processes. Inquiry participants identified issues regarding a lack of monitoring and review of disability services, poor access of deaf staff to the minimum data set, MDS, a lack of independent monitoring and monitoring that does not address the requirements of the Disability Services ACT 1993. 9.116. Mr. Moore acknowledged that program evaluation and performance monitoring are crucial in providing evidence for any service improvement initiatives. 86. With regard to monitoring disability service funded organizations, Mr. Moore stated that ADHC is working towards helping funded organizations build their capability to monitor their own service provision. We are talking about how can we get a more effective approach, and how can we get an approach that does not just simply resource outsiders to come and pressure NGOs to behave in certain ways and check whether they are behaving in certain ways. You will always need some of that, but can you get more of that effect by helping NGOs build their own capability to better monitor what it is they are doing? What would it take to make sure that NGO boards are well aware of the level of complaints that are coming into their organization? What are NGO boards doing about that? 87.9.117. Mr. Douglas Hurd, Executive Officer, Disability Council of New South Wales, stated that funded organisations should be independently monitored. To have moved over the last 5 years to increasingly fund non-government organisations to deliver services to people is absolutely the right one, so long as there is clear control and clear monitoring, which should be independent and across the board, of course. 88.9.118. A lack of apparent monitoring of services by ADHC is also evident to official community visitors, according to Ms. Armstrong, who told the committee that official community visitors express concerns that they see little evidence of ADHC monitoring role across the range of visitable services. 89.9.119. Mr. French believes that ADHC and its predecessor organizations have failed in conducting periodic reviews of disability services, which is a requirement of the Disability Services Act 1983. The failure of ADHC and its predecessors to conduct periodic reviews of disability services in accordance with the explicit requirements of the DSA New South Wales is a major contributing factor to the poor quality of many disability services in New South Wales. 90.9.120. While expressing overall satisfaction with ADHC auditing and monitoring processes, Ms. Everson identified issues regarding the lack of access, deaf staff of communicating with staff regarding the minimum data set, MDS. In general, we are satisfied with ADHC processes for auditing and program evaluation. The minimum data set reporting process remains inaccessible for deaf staff at our organization. If we need to contact MDS for any information, the phone generally reaches an answering machine, and MDS staff members call us back, but only using a voice call. It would be ideal if MDS were to install a TTY, telephone typewriter, publicize the TTY number, and train their staff in the use of the TTY and the NRS, National Relay Service. 91.9.121. Mr. French believes that ADHC's integrated monitoring system is flawed due to a lack of independence in its administration, and because it does not address the requirements of the Disability Services Act 1993. ADHC is currently implementing a so-called integrated monitoring system, IMS. This includes a service review and monitoring component that incorporates a service provider self-assessment, desk audit by regional ADHC staff, then an on-site review, and service development action planning, if required. The framework for these activities is a service review instrument, which is structured around three domains: organizational capacity, providing services and programs, and capacity building. There are a number of very serious problems with the integrated monitoring system viewed from the perspective of service recipients through the lens of S15 of the DSA New South Wales. First and most obviously, there is no independence in the administration of the IMS for services provided directly by ADHC. The performance criteria and key performance indicators do not directly or comprehensively address the matters set out in the objects and in Schedule 1 of the DSA New South Wales. 92.9.122. Issues regarding conflict of interest in ADHC's role in the disability sector are examined in the next section. 9.123. Mr. French also identified that organizations can have good policies but poor service provision, and that this issue is not captured by the integrated monitoring system. The IMS method is essentially a desk audit and policy/administrative review approach. There is no, or very limited, direct evaluation of the services. A service may have excellent policies, but operate poor quality services that ignore these policies, and might potentially score favorably under such a methodology. Finally, there is very little, if any, opportunity for service users and their associates, family members and advocates etc. to contribute their views on service quality and quality improvement priorities. 93.9.124. From the point of view of a funded service provider, Mr. Bohm expressed that there are many onerous reporting demands on service providers, that the reporting requirements are often duplicated between different groups. The reporting load for funded services has increased many times over the years without additional relative funding for administration. Some smaller direct service providers funded by ADHC struggle with increasingly onerous reporting requirements, often unnecessarily complex reporting processes. ADHC-funded services often are audited by multiple groups, ISO, ADHC, FACTA. Auditing requirements should be standardized, and a single audit conducted which meets the requirements of all funding bodies. 94. Committee comment 9.125. The committee acknowledges the importance of effective monitoring and evaluation in providing quality services to people with disability. The committee notes with concern that current monitoring and evaluation processes do not comply with the Disability Services Act 1993 9.126. The committee believes that the establishment of an independent organization to monitor disability services, recommendation 44, will improve how organizations are monitored, and ensure that monitoring complies with relevant legislation and policy. Conflicts of interest 9.127. This section examines issues regarding conflict of interest in the administration and provision of disability services in New South Wales. Inquiry participants identified that there is a potential conflict of interest in the provision of disability services, in particular ADHC's conflicting responsibilities as funder and regulator of disability services, while also being a major service provider. 9.128. The author of submission 14 suggested that a conflict of interest occurred when the funded organization that provided accommodation service to her daughter allowed the manager to employ her mother at the group home. 95. 9.129. The author of submission 56 stated that senior ADHC staff have also employed family in positions and funded contracts to family. There are cases known where an executive director has let government-funded contracts to immediate kin and or employed immediate kin in management positions. Tender may have been called for and positions advertised, but outcomes were pre-established. 96. 9.130. ADHC-funded advocacy services were another area of potential conflict of interest identified by Spinal Cord Injuries Australia that may have an impact on services provided. Currently, funding to support these organizations is provided directly by ADHC, with ADHC contract managers supervising the provision of services and attempting to ensure compliance with the disability service standards. We wish to highlight that there is a clear potential for ADHC-funded advocacy service providers to not bite the hand that feeds them, whether real or at least perceived, at the expense of a client's ADHC-related issue leading to a conflict of interest. In fact, in advocacy circles it is quite widely discussed as standard that funding may be at risk if you are too adversarial with ADHC. We feel that direct funding through ADHC of advocacy service providers does not lead necessarily to better outcomes. 97. 9.131. Advocacy is also examined in the next section. 9.132. Mr. Philip French, Director, New South Wales Disability Discrimination Legal Centre Incorporated, explained that there is a structural conflict of interest within ADHC. As the funder and regulator of disability services, ADHC is also a major provider of services. In 1998, the specialist services provided by the New South Wales Department of Community Services and the Home Care Service of New South Wales were transferred and merged with the Ageing and Disability Department to create the Department of Ageing, Disability and Home Care. Ministerial responsibility for this new department was vested in a Minister for Ageing and Minister for Disability Services. This merger represented a return to the structural conflict of interests associated with the funder and regulator of disability services also being a major provider of disability services, and of those services that are among the poorest quality services. This situation continues under ADHC 98. 9.133. The detrimental impact of this conflict of interest was identified by Mr. French, including the lack of an independent quality assurance system, conflicts in quality improvement strategies that might require additional funding, and failure to comply with the Disability Services Act. As we shall discuss further following, this has at least three very negative consequences for the quality of disability services in New South Wales. First, Despite its assertions to the contrary, ADHC and its predecessor has not established an effective independent quality assurance system in relation to its own services. Second, it means that as the agency ultimately responsible for the funding of disability services, ADHC has a conflict of interest identifying and pursuing quality improvement strategies in disability services that might require additional funding, and innovative funding approaches. Third, in spite of the explicit requirements of the DSA New South Wales, ADHC and its minister have failed to ensure that the allocation of funding for direct services complies with S10 of the DSA New South Wales, and this has the effect, and probably the purpose, of frustrating the consumer protection measures incorporated into S20 of the DSA New South Wales. 99.134. Mr. Adam Johnston, a long-term home care and personal care service user, also identified that ADHC's role of service provider and funder results in a conflict of interest. While I am a recipient of ADHC services, and am on the board of a non-government service provider, my personal view is that ADHC is an organization in a perpetual conflict of interest. As both a service provider and funding body, equally, for service providers dependent on government funding for a large slice of their budgets, it has to be asked just how much flexibility and choice these organizations can truly give their clients, as a consequence of the financial relationship with dependence on government. 109.135. Mr. French stated that there is an overwhelming conflict of interest in regards to ADHC's process for monitoring service providers. 101. Recommendations to overcome conflicts of interest. 9.136. Mr. French advised the committee that the New South Wales Law Reform Commission undertook a review of the Disability Services Act in 1998/99, which identified the structural conflicts of interest in the quality assurance of specialist disability services. He stated that the review provided recommendations to address these conflicts of interest, however they were never acted upon. The establishment of an independent Disability Quality Assurance Council, DISCAC, to accredit and monitor specialist disability services. The Commission recommended that the membership of DISCAC include representatives of consumers and service providers with recognized knowledge and expertise. The functions proposed for DISCAC included establishing a new quality assurance system, assessing and certifying services in transition, assessing and certifying new services as conforming with the DSA, providing advice and support to services about quality service provision, monitoring whether services are achieving continuous quality improvement, identifying and registering services of concern, where closer monitoring may be necessary, notifying the minister, if a service fails, to comply with the requirements of the quality assurance process, and recommending to the minister that sanctions be imposed on services that fail to comply with the objects, principles, and applications of principles, the revised standards, see Recommendation 28, or their transition plans. Unfortunately, the Commission's recommendations have never been acted upon. 102.9.137. Ms. Des Sands, Executive Director, People with Disability, also highlighted the Law Reform Commission's review, and supported the recommendation to establish an independent body to monitor and accredit disability service providers. In reviewing ADHC-provided services, it is critical to avoid conflicts of interests by establishing an independent body to accredit and monitor specialist disability services. PWD supports the recommendation made by the New South Wales Law Reform Commission following its review of the DSA in 1999, and suggests that the proposal contained in the recommendation replace the IMF recommendation 7.20 and 7.21 in the Commission's report from its review, stated the establishment of a new and independent body to administer the quality assurance process and to monitor quality. 103.9.138. Ms. Sands stated that the recommendation of the Law Reform Commission should be implemented regarding the establishment of an independent organization to monitor, accredit and review disability services. PWD recommends that the New South Wales Government establish a Disability Services Quality Assurance Council to accredit, monitor and review the disability service system, as outlined in the New South Wales Law Reform Commission report from its review of the DSA, and that this body replace the current IMF. 104. 9.139. Spinal Cord Injuries Australia recommended that the perceived or real conflict of interest in the provision of independent advocacy services would be addressed if advocacy services funding was moved to the New South Wales Attorney General's Department. 105. 9.140. Ms. Smith also provided a recommendation to reduce the potential for conflict of interest to occur in advocacy services. To minimize the possibility or the perception of conflict of interest, advocacy support should be provided by organizations that do not also undertake service provision to promote strong and effective independent advocacy. 106. Committee comment. 9.141. The committee notes with concern the conflicts of interest that exist or are perceived to exist within the disability service system, and believe that the need for an independent organization to monitor disability services is strengthened by this evidence. 9.142. The committee acknowledges that the recommendations made by the New South Wales Law Reform Commission were made many years ago. However, as the same issues remain, the recommendations are still relevant today. The committee understands that the key issues relate to the structural conflict of interest within ADHC regarding the conflicting roles of funder and regulator of services also being a major provider of services. 9.143. Advocacy services were highlighted as a particular area of concern in regards to conflict of interest. The committee understands that it is difficult for independent advocacy services to be provided under the current funding arrangement. The committee understands that a conflict results from advocates being funded by the organization they may inadvertently criticize through their role of supporting people with disability to access appropriate services. 9.144. The committee agrees that people with disability would receive more impartial and person-centered advocacy services if advocacy funding was not administered by ADHC. The committee believes that this would free advocates to provide the most appropriate services and support without fear of biting the hand that feeds them. The committee recommends that funding for advocacy services is administered by a department that is independent of disability service provision. Recommendation 4. That the New South Wales government move funding administration of advocacy services to a department that is independent of disability service provision. Disability services data and research. 9.145. This section examines issues regarding data available in the planning of disability services. Some inquiry participants identified issues regarding disability services data, including infrequent data collection, limited data availability and a lack of reliable data on the prevalence of Aboriginal people with disability. 9.146. Mr. Moore advised the committee that there is a shortage of data in the disability sector. He advised that this is because the Australian Bureau of Statistics, ABS, survey upon which the sector relies for base data is conducted only once every 6 years. We have in the disability space been making significant improvements in terms of our understanding of population, but we do suffer from a paucity of data in this area. We only have a once in 6 year chance to see the totality of the population of people with a disability in New South Wales through an ABS survey, and that we do our best to try to model out an understanding of just what is the level of need and what is the right way to respond to that need in that context, but our position is somewhat limited. I put that up front because I feel that there is enormous frustration about the ability of the agency to be able to point to just how well we are doing against population data, but it is a very difficult issue which has been recognized nationally. 107. 9.147. The impact of infrequent data collection on current planning on Phase 2 of Stronger Together was also identified by Mr. Moore. We built our modelling on the 2003 ABS data collection to do the initial 5 years of funding. We are having to build plans around the second 5 years on exactly the same 2003 data. The data the ABS has just collected for the replacement 2003 survey will not be available until early next year. It is not that the ABS is not trying hard. It is the circumstances, difficulty, and complexity of the collection. We paid, collectively in this case we, being state, territory or Commonwealth governments, the ABS to double the sample size and expand the questions in order to get a better survey, but it just takes time to get that data. If I had my preference, I would love to see once every 2 or 3 years such a survey, enabling us to then get a good sense of the population and then ask some questions about whether our programs have performed well by seeing whether there are changes in population, expressed levels of need, and other issues that people are showing up. 108. 9.148. The ADHC submission identifies problems regarding data sources in the disability service sector that enable the agency to determine unmet need. There are no authoritative data sources that enable us to determine the level of need in the population that is not being met by government-funded interventions, and which requires such an intervention and recognition of this. At a meeting on 4 June 2010, state and Australian government disability ministers endorsed the methodology for the development of a national need and supply model. Ministers noted the potential of such a model to assist jurisdictions with strategic planning for the long-term sustainability of disability service systems in several ways, including as a basis for expanding or changing service delivery approaches to forecast trends in growth, changes in the care support structures, and associated fiscal impacts, improving accountabilities between service providers and users, and as an evidence base to support why certain actions have been taken, and to evaluate the outcomes of those actions. 109.149. Mr. Bassotti stated that there is also a lack of data regarding unmet need for services for people with spinal cord injury. The extent of unmet need is difficult to ascertain as there is no real data available which can identify the number of people with C currently living in New South Wales. 110.9.150. Due to the absence of available data in this area, Paraquad employed a researcher to investigate the demographic profile of people with spinal cord injuries in New South Wales. Key barriers experienced through this research include: hospital separation data had only been kept since 1995. In addition, people with C are not always readmitted to designated spinal units when they need treatment for health issues, but are more likely go to mainstream hospitals, where hospital separation data is not always clear, dependent on reason for admission. State spinal services have only existed since 2003, so data is limited. ADHC were unable to quantify the number of people with C receiving funding for attendant care/home care services. Centrelink do not routinely collect data on type of disability. The National Injury Surveillance Database was seen as a useful line of inquiry, however, access was denied due to privacy concerns. Preventing double counting is a big problem as there are no unique identifiers which allow separation of data. 111.9.151. The ADHC submission identified that the shortage of systemic disability service data collection has not been as high of a priority on the national agenda, which limits the ability for ADHC to plan strategically for the future needs of people with disability. Disability research also suffers from limited systematic data collection, and information on disability has not been high on the national statistical agenda for generic collections such as general social and health surveys. This has impacted on the potential to understand our clients and their needs beyond the existing client base. There are also issues with the National Minimum Data Set, MDS, the detailed data collection on ADHC direct and funded clients, which requires data development to better reflect current practice. These issues limit the ability to review past experience and to plan strategically for the future needs of people with disabilities. 112.9.152. Ms. Regan explained that data return rate in the HACC program is very low in New South Wales. She advised that it has improved, but it still remains low. New South Wales has reported the lowest return rate of HACC data in Australia for several years. This has greatly improved in recent years following ADHC's HACC data remediation and training project and the creation of the Minimum Data Set, MDS, help desk. However, the New South Wales return rate remains very low in both HACC and disability services, resulting in evaluation problems with activity comparisons, performance assessments, client numbers and value for money. 113.9.153. Mr. Bohm conveyed that the Minimum Data Set, MDS, is a confusing reporting system. The statistics are not accurate, and limited feedback is provided to users of the system. The MDS is seen by many as a very confusing reporting system. Many services are reporting using different methods, and hence statistics are not accurate. Many councils have had no feedback since HACC and CSTDA training on the recruitment of outreach workers to assist in MDS reporting was conducted. The MDS could be a valuable data source that should be made available for local area planning and councils. New integrated planning processes. Changes to the MDS to collect outcomes for clients would greatly enhance the value of the data for future service planning. 114.9.154. The New South Wales HMMS State Council also identified that there is a lot of information that isn't captured by the MDS, including unmet need and funding shortfall. The New South Wales HMMS State Council supports the collection of the information for the minimum data set, MDS. However, there is a vast amount of information regarding unmet need, client waiting lists, and funding shortfalls which is not adequately captured in the HACC sector. Whilst the MDS is used for planning purposes by both the Commonwealth and state government, the MDS only focuses on past episodes of service, and therefore does not capture the whole picture. State Council wishes to alert the Commonwealth to this issue with an aim to improving data collection for future planning purposes. 115.9.155. A lack of reliable data on the prevalence of disability in Aboriginal communities was identified by the Aboriginal Disability Network, who also provided some reasons why this may be so. There is a figure of 37% of the Aboriginal population are Aboriginal people living with disabilities. However, that figure also acknowledges that this figure may in fact be a conservative one, given that it does not include psychological disabilities. One of the most basic reasons why data on prevalence continues to be unreliable is that many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people with disabilities do not in fact identify as people with disabilities. This occurs for a range of reasons, including: why would you identify as a person with disability when you already experience discrimination based on your aboriginality? That is, why take on another negative label? In traditional language, there was no comparable word to disability, which suggests that disability may have been accepted as part of the human experience. Or in some communities, particularly communities that continue to practice a more traditional lifestyle, disability may be viewed as a consequence of married wrong way. That is, many Aboriginal people with disabilities and their parents and family members experience stigma related to a kind of bad karma view of disability. A predominance of the medical model of disability has had a profoundly negative impact on the lives of many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people with disabilities. Much of the focus on contemporary Indigenous Australia relates to the Closing the Gap campaign. This campaign, whilst essential, often focuses heavily on primary health interventions. This does not address the whole of life needs of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people with disabilities. An example of this includes recognition, rightfully, of the high prevalence of hearing impairment amongst young Aboriginal children and a concerted campaign to address this. What tends to happen, however, is that many Aboriginal children are getting their hearing impairment treated, however, their accompanying learning disability, which has occurred because of extended periods without proper hearing, does not get addressed. This results in only part of the job being done, that is, a medical intervention has taken place but a social model of disability intervention around the more long-term related impairment has not. 116.9.156. Professor Julie Biles, President, New South Wales Division of the Australian Association of Gerontology, highlighted the importance of research in providing a strong evidence base for service provision, including the use of linked data. We would like to make a strong recommendation regarding the value and importance of research for providing an evidence base for service provision, for evaluating the equity, effectiveness, and efficiency of services, and for planning for future service needs. We argue that such research needs to involve a number of disciplines and research approaches, including research using administrative and linked data. For example, recent projects using home and community care data have provided information on barriers to access and effective models of care for older men and opportunities for the health promotion and disease prevention for people receiving HACC services. 117.9.157. The committee also received evidence that funded organisations are required to input data into multiple systems. The Anglica Sydney submission also explained that organisations do not receive feedback once the data has been provided. Each government-funded program has its own reporting requirements and separate database system. This requires data entry at the service end, but provides minimal reporting back to the services or the return of such data. It is generally not possible to access the program data once it has been entered in either the state nor federal government databases, and so a system of double entry of data is required, which is extremely time-consuming and inefficient for not-for-profits. 118.9.158. Anglica Sydney believes that a significant amount of data is captured by the government, and that it is not used adequately, to report back to the sector on its performance. Currently, a significant amount of data is being captured by governments in various databases for various programs across the country. However, there appears to be no intention to consolidate and analyze this data for high-level reporting back to the sector on performance and outcomes. There is a consistent focus by government on inputs into the programs, but very little reporting of outputs or outcomes back to the sector. Benchmarking and regular reviews of performance in key funding areas would be possible if such global data analysis was carried out. 119.9.159. Anglica recommend that the current data capture system for ADHC-funded programs be reviewed, with the aim of providing maximum data access to services for their own reporting and internal evaluation purposes. 120.9.160. Mr. Moore stated that there is a need to take a more deliberate and considered approach to creating a robust evidence base for disability services, suggesting a consolidated national approach may be appropriate. National disability research activities have often been driven reactively by the immediate needs of the day. There has been no consolidated national effort to explore basic questions on people with disabilities, their present and future needs, or the best ways to serve their needs. Therefore, there is no rich body of knowledge for policy makers and practitioners to draw upon to shape our practices and our plans for the future. 121.9.161. The significant issue of infrequent data collection is being addressed by ADHC through working with ABS and the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, AIHW, to improve other relevant statistical data collections. ADHC has also been lobbying for changes where the limited statistical information available has become a barrier to building quality evidence. One outcome is that the 2009 SDAC doubled its sample size and some questions have been modified to better reflect sector's needs. ADHC has been working with ABS and AIHW, the national statistical agencies, to improve the other statistical collections, such as ABS Community Service Survey, that would be beneficial to disability sector. 122. Committee comment. 9.162. The committee acknowledges the difficulties faced by ADHC regarding the infrequent collection of disability sector data, and acknowledges the work that ADHC is doing to make good use of other relevant statistical data collections. The committee understands that this makes it difficult for ADHC to plan for the needs of people with disability in New South Wales, and to adequately plan for Phase 2 of Stronger Together. 9.163. The committee agrees with Mr. Moore that a survey of service users, carers and their families should be completed every 3 years, to improve ADHC's understanding of the population that is receiving a service, the level of unmet need, and any other relevant issues that are not captured through other means. Recommendation 5. That the Minister for Disability Services conduct a survey of all service users, carers and their families who receive services from ADHC and funded organisations every 3 years, to improve ADHC's understanding of issues in the disability service system. That the results of the survey and ADHC's response to the results are published within 6 months after completion of the survey. Licensed boarding houses. 9.164. The committee heard that boarding houses are an accommodation option for people with a disability. A boarding house must be licensed by ADHC if they contain two or more people with a disability. Across the state, there are about 50 or 60 licensed boarding houses with approximately 800 residents. Boarding houses vary in size. For example, a boarding house on the Central Coast has over 100 residents, while in Newcastle there is one with 4 and another with 11. 123. 9.165. Licensed boarding houses are monitored by licensing officers employed by ADHC and are visited by official community visitors. In contrast, unlicensed boarding houses have neither of these safeguards, and if they have more than two residents with a disability, may be operating illegally. Ms. Armstrong, official community visitor, shared with the committee her concerns about those persons with a disability who reside in an unlicensed boarding house, which are not monitored by ADHC. The identification of people with disabilities living in boarding houses is a matter of concern for community visitors. Because boarding houses are licensed under the Youth and Community Services Act, they are monitored by licensing officers employed by ADHC, and community visitors visit licensed boarding houses. Community visitors do not visit other boarding houses or rooming houses that are not licensed. 124. 9.166. Boarding houses are regulated under the Youth and Community Services ACT 1973. The committee heard evidence that this act is very old and in need of reform. In particular, Ms. Sands, Executive Director, People with Disability, expressed concern that the rights and care of boarding house residents needs to be improved. She provided examples where residents have been over-medicated and subject to punitive and overbearing rules. Because the boarding house sector is not covered by the Disability Services Standards or the Disability Services Act, it is governed by the Youth and Community Services Act, which is a very old act, and, as you're probably aware, there has been a process of reform, but it has been stagnating over the last 10 years. We are very concerned that that act has not been modernized to concentrate on the rights of residents, so I suppose a lot of our work with residents is looking at their basic rights to be able to have choice about what they do and where they go. There are incidences of people in boarding houses who are forced to take the annual holiday that all residents take, where there is a lot of over-medication or medication distributed inappropriately, where the whole of their disability pension or 80% of it may be going to support their lodgings and food with very little left over. There are a lot of punitive measures to perhaps control what is called challenging behavior, which might be taking cigarettes from people or only distributing them at certain times. 125. 9.167. Ms. Armstrong also expressed concern about the lower level of services provided to persons with a disability, just because they reside in a boarding house. In comparison, persons living in a funded group home have a much greater right to access of disability services. The argument is more about equity. A person with a disability living in a group home has a right to receive X services. A person with a disability living in a boarding house does not have that same right, because the operators of that boarding house are not required to deliver services in accordance with the Disability Services Act. That is it in a nutshell. It is about equity. Persons in a group home would usually have a day program for 4 days a week, and then they would have a day at home. A person with a disability living in a licensed boarding house can leave that boarding house and go for a walk, but there is no onus on the proprietor to assist that person in organizing a day program. 126. 9.168. The committee also received evidence that service providers are referring people with disability to unlicensed boarding houses because the alternative is to live on the street. For instance, Ms. Armstrong explained to the committee, "All I know from my working in the community is that people with disabilities are often driven to take accommodation in these facilities because they find it difficult to get anything else." Through our work, we are aware that there are agencies and community-based services that continue to refer people with a disability to unlicensed boarding houses because the alternative is the street. 127. Committee comment. 9.169. The committee is concerned about the level of care provided to persons with a disability in both licensed and unlicensed boarding houses. It is evident to the committee that boarding house residents are some of the most vulnerable and marginalized in society. 9.170. The committee is particularly concerned that persons with disability are being referred to unlicensed boarding houses simply because no other option is available. Recommendation 6. That the Minister for Disability Services ensure that people with disability who reside in boarding houses receive person-centered planning, and that the services provided to people who reside in boarding houses comply with the New South Wales Disability Service Standards. 9.171. The committee believes that an increased focus on the inspection and monitoring of licensed boarding houses is appropriate, and that there needs to be a formal mechanism for people to report boarding houses that are operating illegally. 1. See, for example, Submissions 50, 56, 74, and 89. 2. Submission 31, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, p. 83. 3. Submission 56, Name Suppressed, p. 2. 4. Submission 56, Name Suppressed, p. 5. 5. Submission 74, Name Suppressed, p. 2. 6. Submission 71, Name Suppressed, p. 1. 7. Submission 44, Name Suppressed, p. 1. 8. Submission 8, Name Suppressed, p. 1. 9. Submission 10, Name Suppressed, p. P14, 10, Submission 6, Names Oppressed, P1, 11, Submission 94, Dr. Robert Leitner, Chairperson, Association of Doctors in Developmental Disability, P18, 12, Submission 102, Ms. Mary Dallow, Community Planning Coordinator, Maitland City Council, P3, 13, Submission 39, Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, P15, 14, Submission 94, P18, 15, Submission 67, Mr. Sean Lummis, Policy and Advocacy Manager, and Mr. Greg Killeen, Senior Policy Officer, Spinal Cord Injuries Australia, P9, 16, Submission 9, Mr. Gary Blashcombe, National President, Disabled Surfers Association of Australia Incorporated, P5, 17, Submission 50, Names Oppressed, P2, 18, Submission 14, Ms. Carolyn Mason, P19, 19, Ms. Ross Armstrong, Consultation Committee Representative Official Community Visitor, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, P48, 20, Submission 94, P18, 21, Submission 67, P9, 22, see for example, Submissions 14, 20, 30, 41, and 100A, 23, Submission 20, Mr. Philip French, Director, New South Wales Disability Discrimination Legal Centre Incorporated, P9, 24, New South Wales Ombudsman, People with Disabilities and the Closure of Residential Centres, August 2010, P1, 25, Submission 30, Ms. Christine Regan, Senior Policy Officer, Council of Social Service of New South Wales, P13, 26, Submission 41, Ms. Ross Armstrong, Official Community Visitor, Official Community Visitor Scheme, P5, 27, Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director, New South Wales Council for Intellectual Disability, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, P12, 28, Submission 61, Mr. Martin Laverty, Chairman of the Board, the Lorna Hodgkins and Sunshine Home, P3, 29, Submission 14, P20, 30, Submission 67, PP 13-14, 31, Submission 60, Ms. Sue Crane, Advocacy and Research Officer, Vision Australia, P5, 32, Submission 97, Mr. Damien Griffiths, Executive Officer, Aboriginal Disability Network, P5, 33, Submission 31, P83, 34, Submission 31, P98, 35, Submission 31, PP 98-99, 36, Submission 57, Ms. Susan Smith, Coordinator, Disability Information Advocacy Service, P4, 37, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P19, 38, Submission 32, Ms. Emily Kasker, State Policy Coordinator, National Disability Services, New South Wales, P26, 39, Submission 32, P26, 40, Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P19, 41, Submission 31, PP 100-101, 42, Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P18, 43, Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P19, 44, Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P19, 45, Ms. Amelia Snair, Senior Policy Officer, Disability Council of New South Wales, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P46, Submission 90, Ms. Sharon Everson, Chief Executive Officer, The Deaf Society, P8, 47, Submission 67, P10, 48, Ms. Judy Brossis, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, P14, 49, Ms. Brossis, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, P15, 50, Submission 38, Ms. Jennifer Allo-Ohm, P1, 51, Submission 77, Mrs. Yolanda Ensiner, Fairfield City Council and Fairfield Seniors Network, P5, 52, Submission 86, Mr. John Paul Kerr, P1, 53, Mr. Mark Kay, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, P30, 54. Submission 14, p. 20, 55. Submission 14, p. 20, 56. Mr. Mark K., Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 30, 57. Submission 14, p. 20, 58. Submission 39, p. 16, 59. Submission 60, p. 5, 60. Submission 32, p. 24. 61. Submission 15, Ms. Estelle Shields, p. 3, 62. Ms. Valerie Noon, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 13, 63. Submission 56, p. 5, 64. Submission 72, Mr. Noel Bohm, Director Policy, Local Government and Shires Association of New South Wales, pp 7-8, 65. Submission 101, Ms. Adeline Hodgkinson, Director and Chair, New South Wales Agency for Clinical Innovation, Brain Injury Rehabilitation Directorate, p 7, 66. Submission 32, p 24. 67. Submission 21, Mr. Maximum Bisotti, Chief Executive Officer, Paraplegic and Quadriplegic Association, Paraquad, p. 9 and 10. 68. Submission 32, p. 24. 69. Submission 90, p. 3. 70. Submission 90, p. 3. 71. Submission 112, Mr. Michael Hart, p. 1. 72. Submission 39, p. 16. 73. Submission 112, Mr. Michael Hart, p. 1. 74. Submission 51, Ms. Ruth Robinson and Ms. Anne-Marie Elias, Physical Disability Council of New South Wales and Council on the Aging New South Wales, p. 16, 75. Submission 57, p. 2, 76. Submission 24, Mr. Mark Grierson, Chief Executive Officer, Disability Advocacy New South Wales, p. 1, 77. Submission 85, Ms. Gillian McDonnell, The Aged Care Rights Service, p. 12, 78. Submission 85, Ms. Gillian McDonnell, The Aged Care Rights Service, p. 12, 79. Submission 51, p. 16, 80. Ms. Noon, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 14, 81. Ms. Armstrong, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p. 50, 82. Submission 32, p. 25, 83. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 19, 84. Submission 86A, Mr. John Paul Kerr, p. 1, 85. Submission 51, pp 15-16, 86. Submission 31, p. 61, 87. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 21, 88. Mr. Douglas Hurd, Executive Officer, Disability Council of New South Wales, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 29, 89. Submission 41, p. 4, 90. Submission 20, p. 7, 91. Submission 90, p. 3, p. 8, 92. Submission 20, p. 6, 93. Submission 20, p. 6, 94. Submission 72, p. 8, 95. Submission 14, p. 5, p. 18, 96. Submission 56, p. 5, 97. Submission 67, p. 10, 98. Submission 20, p. 3, 99. Submission 20, p. 3, 100. Submission 104, Mr. Adam Johnston, pp 3-4. 101. Submission 20, p. 6, 102. Submission 20, p. 6, 103. Submission 91, Ms. Thess Sands, Executive Director, People with Disability Incorporated, p. 20, 104. Submission 91, p. 21, 105. Submission 67, p. 14, 106. Submission 57, p. 2, 107. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 2, 108. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 6, 109. Submission 31, pp 45-46, 110. Submission 21, p 4, 111, submission 21, pp 4-5, 112, submission 31, p 61, 113, submission 30, p 16, 114, submission 72, p 8, 115, submission 34, Ms. Tassie Shepherd-Smith, Executive Officer, New South Wales Home Modification and Maintenance State Council, p 1, 116, submission 97, Mr. Damien Griffiths, Executive Officer, Aboriginal Disability Network, p 3, 117, submission 37, Professor Julie Biles, President, New South Wales Division of the Australian Association of Gerontology, p 1, 118, submission 66, Mr. Peter Kell, Chief Executive Officer, Anglica, Diocese of Sydney, p 14, 119, submission 66, p 14, 120, submission 66, p 14, 121, submission 31, p 61, 122, submission 31, p 64, 123, Ms. Armstrong, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p 46, 124, Ms. Armstrong, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p 46, 125. Ms. Des Sands, Executive Director, People with Disability Incorporated, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, pp 33-34. 126, Ms. Armstrong, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p 49, 127, Ms. Armstrong, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p 47,